Have you been searching for the best ticket deals around? Well, look no further. With TixFlix, the price you see is the price you pay. And TixFlix just happens to have over $6 billion in ticket inventory just waiting for you. They absolutely mean it when they say every ticket, every venue, everywhere. And you can save even more with promo code PULSE in all caps to save you 5% off your total purchase. Just go to TixFlix.com and click the search bar. Search events based on your geographic location. Pick the show you want, and bam, it's showtime. Sporting events, Broadway shows, concerts, and more with TixFlix.com. And while you're there, be sure to sign up for the email newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest news and savings with TixFlix. That's TixFlix.com, TixFlix.com. Every ticket, every venue, everywhere.
All right, does that work for you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
And feel free to interrupt us at any time because we've really run out of ideas after 5 years, so we could use some, like, new conversation points.
I will be chiming in.
Don't worry about saying stupid because that's our brand.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of Superhero Speak.
But I think many of the people that love this character and that love superheroes in general have used these stories as inspiration to say, you know what? I'm going to do something good in the world. I'm going to make a difference like my hero when I was a kid.
That is my fondest memory of it, because when you're doing comic books, you want them to affect people.
Right.
You want people to care. You want to strike emotions. And I knew that Clone Saga was striking a lot of emotions.
Can you imagine Pulp Fiction starring Goofy and Mickey Mouse?
I can totally imagine that.
I'm sure somebody's written that one too.
Quarter pounder with cheese in France, Mickey. Look! Boy, ale with cheese, Mickey. Yeah. I can totally
see.
I would watch the hell out of that movie.
Yes, I gladly sacrifice up my progeny to you, a mighty Marvel beast.
But Neil Adams is somewhere going, it's my time.
How do you measure success?
Hey, everyone. You're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host, Dave.
John. Hi, it's John. Stop it. Damn it.
And this week, boys and girls, we have a special guest with us. He is the writer and creator of the syndicated comic strip, Sour Grapes. And, of course, it's the one and only Tim Jones. How you doing, sir?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's
it's good. I'm also the artist, too. I try my best.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. You also, is it true that you wrote an episode of Jack of All Trades? Is that you or is that somebody else?
I don't, the strip's based on my life, so probably not.
Okay. Unless there was Doug. I'm going through there. Apparently there's other Tim Jones, there's other Joneses out there, and I'm looking through them and it's like, oh, there's a Tim Jones that wrote some prequels to Star Wars books. There's a Tim Jones that wrote like a single episode of Jack of All Trades, and I'm like.
No, I'm not that talented.
I don't know. Have you seen Jack of All Trades?
I like that. I don't know. Who is that? Is a family member? I don't know.
That was Bruce Campbell, right?
There's Bruce Campbell in it. That's probably all you need to know.
Which makes it great.
It was a TV series in 2000.
I've never heard of it.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh. Yeah, it's kind of terrible that you're actually funny in a completely different manner. Funnier than I'll ever be. I mean, you know, it must really suck.
I don't know if anybody's ever said that to me.
So we're off to a good start today.
Yes. So, you were recently on the So Wizard podcast. That's how I first heard about you. And, I was talking to Joey and he said that I should invite you on. So here we are.
Oh, great.
So why don't you tell the listeners a little bit, like, about Sour Grapes and, you know, where the idea came from, about the comic strip, and if they're interested, where they can find more about it.
Sure. Sour Grapes is a self-syndicated comic strip, meaning I make all the phone calls myself and become very good at begging. And so right now it's in 23 newspapers in Rhode Island, Mass, and California. And it's basically about a dog named Aesop. He's a miserable flying dog. And based on my life, but there's other characters in there. They all live together in a problematic world that I'm sure we can all relate to. So it all kind of goes from there. And, you know, like I said, it's based on my life. Aesop's a miserable flying dog, but he's also a good listener, and he's there for the other characters in his own strange, miserable way. So, you know, that's basically it. You can find it, of course, on my website, which is sourgrapescomic.com. And my social media links are in there, and Facebook and Instagram. I haven't put Twitter on there yet because I don't think anybody cares about me on Twitter. I think I have like maybe 5 followers so far. And but that is Sour Grapes Comic, at Sour Grapes Comic on Twitter. And Instagram is Sour Grapes 2017. And you can just look for me on Facebook, Sour Grapes Comic. And that's all she wrote.
Cool. So I'm kind of curious because we've had a lot of comic book creators on the show and some independent filmmakers and whatnot. And this is, you know, related, but yet still a completely different art form doing comic strips. So like, I guess my first question is, how did you decide that's what you wanted to do? How did you get started with it?
Well, when I was a kid, I always loved looking at the comics pages. You know, back then we called them the funny pages.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we'd get the Sunday paper and sit down and with a box of Munchkins and go through a box of Munchkins and drawing, and you know, like I'll read Garfield and I'll draw Garfield next to it as I'm reading it and all the other comics that I liked in there. So I that's where I started. I always wanted to do a comic strip from there, and just time went along. I went to took some art classes in college and majored in art, and from there just kind of kept going with it and wanted to do, just one day I just sat down and said, you know what, I'm going to bring this to life and do a comic strip. And started with Sour Grapes in 2013, and it just kind of grew from there. I've been very lucky with it kind of exploded on its own, going from one newspaper to the next. And I've got more newspapers interested in that, so... but it's become a part of me.
Mm-hmm.
I feel better after I draw an episode for some reason.
Huh. Well, that's actually pretty good. I mean, getting to do something you love and doing it for work is, it's kind of rare. But I have followed actually quite a few online comics. You know, like PvP, VG Cats, Sluggy Freelance, Bunny, XKCD. And did you ever follow any of those? And did you ever think of making it only online? Or was like your first thought, okay, now I have to call all of these newspapers and keep calling them until they finally put me on? Or
yeah, that one. I never really thought of it. Being on the web, you know, social media and that, because, you know, when I first had these characters, I'm going to back up a little bit. I had a comic strip called Every Blue Moon, and that was in the late 90s, early 2000s. I had that same characters. I had it in six newspapers and that. And back then, you actually, the only place you could be would be in a newspaper. So, you know, I got myself into those newspapers and that. And, you know, and of course, back then, I had to go to each newspaper every week and put my original on the copy machine and shrink the comics down, give them that copy, and they would put it on their board for their layout. So I had to go every week to each paper and do that. Nowadays, it's all email.
Right.
So it's a little easier. So, but I'd rather be in the newspapers. I think I want to preserve the medium as it were. I want to, you know, everything's going digital, which is fine. There's so much more you can do with digital. It's become its own medium for art in that, and, you know, right now I do 60-40, 60 being old school and 40 being on a computer because it's where I fix all my mistakes. But, I'd rather do that. You know, it just happens to be online for Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. Instagram been on for about a year and Twitter just recently. But with Facebook, I wouldn't really be where I'm at if it weren't for Facebook. Because the networking on Facebook is incredible.
Yeah.
So yeah. I've met so many people on Facebook and, you know, actually met them in person sometimes, and you learn from it and you promote yourself and show your comic on there. So you build a whole different kind of following through through Facebook. So to answer your first question, no, I've never wanted to be a webcomic.
So in this era of contracting new, like local news media, what are the challenges? So yourself, I forget the term you use, but you basically do all the syndication. You're self-syndicated is the term you use. What are the challenges that you run into finding partners to work with?
Finding partners to work with?
As far as like the papers you work with. Like what are the challenges in finding them and getting more people on board with your stuff?
Well, it's funny you say that because I was on the phone with an editor that I've been bugging for almost a year now. And I would call them maybe every couple of months, and you know, surprisingly, they're happy to hear from me. And you know, it's just you call them and see, you know, where they're at. And this particular paper is just now starting to construct a comics page where they'll have a few comics, and they want me. And this is after a year of them. Of me going back and forth with them. And it's not just one paper. They have a group of six papers. So if I get in with these guys, I'll be in another six papers. You know, and it looks good, but it's a matter of, you know, I'm good at being a pain in the ass. Ask my wife. But, you call the papers and you find the editor. I always look up and see who the editor or the editor in chief is. I'll call up and call them. If I don't get a hold of them, I'll just keep trying like maybe once a week or so. And, I never leave a message. I never send an email. I always want to talk to the person. And then once I do, I just let them know what I have and ask them if they want to see some samples. And, you know, like I said before, I've been lucky. They've been really receptive to it.
How do one of your pitch sessions go when you're talking to an editor for the first time?
You mean, what do I say?
Yeah, like, how do you do it? Like, this is fascinating for me. I've never met anyone that works in syndicated comic strips before, and I'm just curious as to how it compares to actual comic books as far as pitching stories go and pitching a project like this. So how do you get in touch with, like, when you talk to these editors, like, how does it go?
Well, you know, I call up and I just say, hey, listen, you know, I've got a comic strip called Sour Grapes, and it's right now it's in, I'll say, however many papers it's in, it's 23 papers. It's self-syndicated. It's become very popular. It's, you know, obviously got a good following. And, you know, I would say that I'm trying to branch out into your area. And would you like to see some samples? And it's either yes or no. Basically, I have been hung up on a couple times.
Oh wow!
I can imagine.
You know, not soliciting. Sorry, you know, but and I'll actually try them again and maybe do like a different kind of voice so they don't think it's the same person. Hi, I didn't call you a month ago. Would you like to see some samples of my comic strip? It just happens to be coincidental that someone called you a month before that, asking you if you'd like to see some comic strip. So. Oh, by the way, this is his agent. You know?
So,
and the stinky go through agents like weekly.
Yeah, it's called me. I'm my agent.
One of the things I've always been curious about with comic strip writers is, like, here's the question: is it a daily strip or a weekly?
Right now, I'm weekly.
Okay, so do you just come up with one idea a week, or do you try to knock out 10, you know, at once?
No, I usually just bang out one a week. I do have a job during the day.
Okay.
Which is fine because kids in college and stuff. But
right.
Yeah. I'm almost famous. I kind of might get there soon someday. But yeah, I crank one out once a week. I do some monthlies and some and one that's every 2 weeks paper. But you know what's good about it, because I can think back to the week before and find out and see or reflect on something that happened to me that week or something that I heard that I want to throw into the strip. You know, I said before, the strip has become very personal to me, so you know, my own experience, I kind of throw it at the characters in their own world and see how they deal with it. And most of the time it just writes itself.
Oh, okay. Has anyone ever asked you to do a daily?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for that day.
Okay.
That'd be the day that I have to make a big decision.
Right.
You know, syndicate says to me, you know, hey, this would be really like to bring you on, and you know, what can you do? And then you start talking about contracts and how they're going to pay for your kids in college and that and such. So I mean, I can do it. I mean, if I, you know, I can definitely do it, but it's just a matter of getting to that point. You know right now weekly is good for me. It doesn't necessarily mean that I sit down and, you know, write one that night on my deadline, which is actually what I'm doing today, but I don't normally do that. So, yeah, I mean, it'll get to that point. You know, it's just a matter of, I'm on the bridge, let's put it that way.
Right.
Gonna get over the bridge.
Cool. And, So when you're not...
I really like these questions. They're really cool. I've never been asked these questions before. Keep going.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like the vibe of our show is we get creative people on, and when they are in an area that we haven't talked to before, we're curious, like, how does that world work, you know? So...
It works in the back of my mind.
Yeah, because
it's just a matter of bringing it to the front of my mind.
Right.
Because
one of the things that always fascinated me about, like, the funnies in the newspaper is you have set comics that are in there every week. You know? And it's almost like shelf space in a store. And until one of those comics stops running, that shelf space is always occupied. So that makes it difficult for new strips to get in, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I know. I remember in the past where there's been some new strips coming around, and some of the papers will do a trial thing. So they'll take out, I don't know, Butyl Bailey that's been in there since dirt, and they'll take that out and put this new one in, and they'll see if people like it, and they'll do like some kind of a survey or whatever, and that's when you ask all your friends to call up like 20 times each and tell them that they like the strip. But sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, in my case, it's adding a strip to a paper that doesn't have one.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes I'll say to the paper, well, let's do we can do a trial basis, which I haven't done yet, but it's an option. And, we'll do a trial for it, you know, for 6 months and see how you like it. Put it next to your crossword puzzle, and then I'll throw them the joke. The only reason why people get the paper is for the comics and the crossword puzzle anyways. Oh, and the obituaries too. Find out who died, read the comic, and do the crosswords in that order.
Oh, and the police blotter, because it's really interesting to see who's in trouble.
That's right. So,
I'm not old.
As long as I don't see myself in the obituary, I think I'll be all right.
I'd be a little worried if I saw
one of those other Tim Jones is the guy, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So when you're not working on the strip and working at your day job, what kind of things do you do? You know, what kind of movies do you watch, or what inspires you to, you know, and keeps your work going?
I make sure that I'm 1,000% a nerd. If I try and act some other way, it's not gonna. I just did my first past weekend of the year, and I just love surrounding myself with the whole world of imagination, put it that way. Mm-hmm. And under the umbrella of imagination is being a nerd. It's the way I look at it anyways. So, you know, movies, I'm a huge Marvel movie fan. I grew up reading comic books and that. I never read chapter books because my comprehension's horrible. So having a book with pictures in it was really good. Being an artist, you're thinking pictures anyways, so.
Right.
But, you know, I'm a big Marvel fan, you know, I like DC, but not the DCEU. Oh. And, sorry.
It's pretty consistent.
Yeah, I know. I mean, if you don't know, I'm the chief DC apologist for this podcast, so.
I am sorry.
That's my line.
I love all these movies that have come out with Marvel in the past, 11 years now or so?
Yeah.
10 years, 11 years, and what they've been able to accomplish is incredible. It's never been done before in the history of, the continuity in and of itself is just incredible. Everything's connected. And even on an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something on TV, and soon to be Disney Plus.
Yeah.
They're just banking on this. I mean, it's incredible. But, like I said, I just try and surround myself with all things nerd, and drive my wife crazy because it's all I talk about. I either talk about sour grapes, or I'll talk about Comic-Cons or anything in between. It drives her crazy. So just put out the trash.
You're in good company here. I mean, that's how this podcast started, was basically David throwing a microphone in our faces when, after months of stopping in the hallway at the place we all work together and talking about comics, he finally said, well, why don't we put this on tape?
Yeah, you know, it's funny too, where I work, Darren, and they're going to be listening to this, I'm sure, but there's really nobody to talk to about this stuff. You know, and I try, and they just kind of look at me like, not really. You know, it's just not their thing. So, I just like, you know, when I go to a Comic-Con, I feel so at home. You know, I can just talk about it, and everybody else is talking about it and everything else and stuff. So it's, sometimes I just like to sit and listen, you know. So, you know, I've discovered podcasts now, and I listen to a bunch of them, including yours every week. And So Wizard and Angry Geek Show and all these other ones that I really enjoy. I just kind of put my headphones on at work and just kind of get into the whole world and that. So, and then jump on to CNN for some reason.
Well, you need some comedy in your life, right?
Right, exactly. There's plenty of it on there, for God's sakes. Don't get me started. But
so then I need to ask, did you see Captain Marvel? And what did you think?
I did. I saw Captain Marvel, and on opening night, I see all these movies on opening night or opening weekend anyways. Mm-hmm. The only movie that I've missed is, believe it or not, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I missed that. I couldn't get out to see it for some reason, and I just bought it on Blu-ray today when it came out. So, I did see it, and I really, really liked it. It was a lot of fun. It was a good beginning to the next phase of the MCU.
Right.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
In fact, why don't we use that as a segue? Look at some of our social media.
We're done talking about me.
For the moment.
Temporarily.
I can turn it off and then, you know.
Well, no, we're like, so we had reviewed Captain Marvel on our last episode, and we got some comments on Twitter. Kelly McCarthy had said that it was a lot better than I thought it would be. Really enjoyed it.
That's what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah.
And Tim, feel free to jump in here if you want to mention. Again, you love, you know, all things geek. This is your time to shine.
I think I said nerd, but that's all right.
Oh, great geek nerd. Ooh.
The devil's enemy said it was good. Kind of wonder how her powers will affect Thanos. I think a lot of people are thinking that. And Gateway Comics, one of our favorite commenters, said, Timmy and I saw Captain Marvel Saturday, and then we thought it was great. It was full of action, funny without being silly or campy, and totally non-political. All those screaming about the feminist messages, it just wasn't, unless the protagonist being a woman is too much for you. Mm. Yeah, which we talked about that a little bit as well.
Yeah, they're kind of horrible.
And finally, we had Attack of the Nerds. It's not better than Wonder Woman. It is a good movie. It is not a great movie, but it does have server purpose setting up next film and Endgame. I enjoyed the movie and did enjoy the characters. So,
see, I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than what he's alluding to, but
I think it has a better third act than Wonder Woman too.
Well, yeah, I mean, the third act in Wonder Woman was written by, Feige? Was it?
No, Snyder.
Snyder. Oh, God, Snyder. Yeah, they're all blending together now.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah. Those, Matt, the cult of pop, not our Matt, so this is a different Matt. In regards to you saying it was better than Black Panther.
Ooh. Ooh.
No, but I can see how someone would think that. Captain Marvel is really tied to Avengers Endgame and hypes me up for that, whereas Black Panther seems more self-contained.
Yeah, kind of right. Yeah. He's not wrong.
Which isn't that what we said to you, John, last week?
Yeah.
It was.
What'd you say, Tim?
It's kind of apples and oranges, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Between Black Panther her in Captain Marvel, I mean, you know, I really don't see how you can compare the two. But
that's John. He likes to put his foot in his mouth.
I do like the taste of shoe leather.
When I say you, and I mean you, John, I meant you.
Oh, no, it's perfectly fine to mean me in this show. This is...
I'll call you out if I...
Fair enough.
And of course, this week on Twitter, we started our voting for our Nerd Madness play on March Madness. And just real quick, take a knee for Marvel versus DC, one of JD's favorite contributors.
What's up, guys?
I'm loving this March Madness tournament. A lot of surprise names I wasn't expecting to see. Very cool. Which you said thanks to them, JD.
I did. It was cool.
And I reminded them to make sure they listen to the episodes to get the updates.
They actually listen to our show, so I know they're hearing this.
Yes. Since speaking of Nerd Madness, we did finish the voting for the first two, the first round for the first two regions, this past week. And, I'll let you say the winners for the, movies, JD.
Cause I got clean swept by your movies cause you had the first eight picks. Sure.
I just know our audience, so go ahead.
Yes. Infinity War dominated over Be My Neighbor. And Bohemian Rhapsody beat Spider-Verse. Or I'm sorry, Spider-Verse beat Bohemian Rhapsody. So I actually won that one. Exactly. Clean swept. To take it back. Aquaman squeaks out Deadpool 2. Black Panther with a dominant performance over Bandersnatch. It was one of the slaughter rules. How to Train Your Dragon with a winner over A Quiet Place, a decision that I find controversial and incorrect. Ant-Man and the Wasp over Christopher Robin because people have no soul. Solo, a Star Wars film, somehow beat out Mission Impossible Fallout because our fans clearly don't go to the movies enough.
I'm working on that one.
The Incredibles 2. It was a good movie over Hereditary, which is a very weird first-round match. I get why our fans picked The Incredibles 2 over Hereditary, which sets up round two of Infinity War versus Spider-Verse.
Ooh.
Somehow I bracketed this really poorly. Aquaman versus Black Panther. How to Train Your Dragon versus Ant-Man and Wasp, which is just a terrible quarterfinal match. And Solo versus The Incredibles 2. How we got the two best movies in the quarterfinals? Blame me, I screwed everything up.
I have to disagree with you on How to Train Your Dragon 3 versus A Quiet Place.
You are wrong. And I love children, and I have a three-year-old whom I love dearly and love his movies. A Quiet Place is a fantastic movie.
What's a Bandersnatch?
That's a Black Mirror movie. Yeah. If you ever watch Black Mirror on Netflix, it's their film.
It was a choose your own adventure one on Netflix.
I read that and I was kind of like, Bandersnatch, oh, I think I had that once and I needed an ointment. It was so itchy.
That's why you got to use the special shampoo.
still close to the actual show that they
really
quite.
I was
quite
an outpatient, so that's good. I was home in the same day.
I heard that at some point that movie could make your brain itch. It was just
it's that crazy and awesome. But it's also being a Netflix movie. It doesn't surprise me that Black Panther trounced it.
So John,
I'll have to look for that one.
Since anime is your baby, you can read the anime winners and losers.
Before you read this, I just want to say that I voted in every single one of these based purely on what title I like best.
Yes, me too. I second that.
Well, then that would explain the first win, Thunderbolt Fantasy versus Hinamatsuri, but that is actually correct because Thunderbolt Fantasy is basically everybody who sees it comes away going, I can't believe it was that good.
That was also your number one seed overall.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was. Okay. Next one is Castlevania versus Goblin Slayer. I you know what? I'm going to have to say that they called this one too. Even though Goblin Slayer it was a standout anime from this year. Basically, you know, it, I guess the video game nostalgia beats brand new, very, very graphic anime. Overlord. Hey, what?
Warren Ellis wrote Castlevania, so don't discredit the contributions of one Warren Ellis.
Oh no, Castlevania is awesome! I can't wait to see the second season. I mean, it was you know, I gave it credit. It won fair and square. Overlord 3 versus Sword Art Online. Oh God. See, now here's the thing. Overlord 3 is it, what if you were an overpowered bad guy and the camera followed you? And it's breaking a lot of, it's very unique. And then there's Sword Art Online, which basically, one of two things happens when you ask if somebody likes it. They either scream yes or they hit you in the face. So, I can't believe that one won actually against Overlord 3. Mob Psycho versus the Ancient Magus's Bride. I'll give it that. The creator of Mob Psycho 1 is amazing.
Yeah, actually, I have to say who won, John.
Mob Psycho 1. Mob Psycho 1. Sword Art Online 1. Castlevania. Yeah, Mob Psycho beat Ancient Magus's Bride, which I'll give that. I thought there'd be it'd be closer than 80% to 20%, but oh well.
Well, this next one is definitely was picked basically on the name.
Agreed.
Dragon Pilot versus Bunny Girl. Yeah. So, yeah, Bunny Girl won 56% to Dragon Pilot's 44%. I don't know. That's like putting a really popular film against something that won in the cans. So,
that's why we call it an upset.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. That time I was reincarnated as a slime versus Sword Art Online Alicization. And, Slime Art Online won by landslide, 80% to 20%. And I will give you that because again, Sword Art Online, when you're talking Kirito, at least the non-abridged version, it's a love-hate relationship.
It's almost like he's yelling at our fans for voting for the wrong ones.
No, this one I agree with. Devil May Cry, Devil Man Crybaby, and Hero Academia. You have to be of a certain mind. Again, this is another one where it's an Art Nouveau Devil Man Crybaby versus just the really super Avengers type popular Hero Academia. And Hero Academia won 79% to 21%. So
I have to say though, that's purely based on recognition. Because I've heard of Hero Academia, and I've heard of
Devilman, and I've never heard of Hero, and that's why I voted for Devilman.
Well, and here's the thing though, Devilman has been around for like 25 years. It was like a really original anime back in the day, and this is just a new a new storyline with it. And Hero Academia, if you go to any convention. Tim, you probably saw Hero Academia cosplay all over the place.
I just didn't recognize it.
Yeah, but once you see like one episode of the show, the costumes, they're of a certain design, and you'd probably recognize them even if you didn't know who they were. You just know it was Hero. Number 8, Seven Deadly Sins, the Nanatsu no Taizai, versus JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. And considering that one of the biggest memes on the internet is that a JoJo's reference? That would explain why JoJo's Bizarre Adventure won 64% to 36%. I mean, JoJo's is also one that's been around for a very, very long time. The manga has been around, at least a decade, maybe more than a decade and a half, 2 decades. So, yeah, I get why that won, although Seven Deadly Sins, the second season really was awesome. So I would have voted for that, but JoJo's one. So that brings us to the anime round two. It will be number one, Thunderbolt Fantasy versus Castlevania. That's going to be a really interesting matchup. Sword Art Online versus Mob Psycho. Oh my God, I hope. we'll see which one wins that. That's one versus, basically Kirito God Complex. Bunny Girl Senpai versus That Time I Was Reincarnated as a Slime. And My Hero Academia versus JoJo's Bizarre Adventure. That's going to be a war of recognition right there.
Do you have any idea how difficult it was to fit these names into a bracket?
Oh, yeah. And you know how limited you are on the choices are on the Twitter polls?
Yeah, that's why I was trying to shorten them up. And I don't think this was so difficult just based on the titles.
Yeah.
That Time I Was Reincarnated as a Slime is too long.
Yeah. All right. And we just started the voting on the TV yesterday, Monday, as of this week, which will be 2 days ago once this goes up. But anyway, so TV so far, I will just say where they're at. Some of these are still open at this point, but we have The Walking Dead, actually surprisingly losing to Iron Fist.
That is a 1 versus a 16, and Iron Fist has a commanding lead at the moment.
Yes.
Go figures.
Please, Pete, somebody fix that. Come on.
Well, I don't watch
Walking Dead at all,
The voting will be over.
But there's so many people that hate The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
That's one I don't watch and one I didn't like.
I'm guessing Iron Fist you didn't like.
I don't watch The Walking Dead. I think it's like 1001 Ways to Kill a Zombie. And Iron Fist, I just didn't like it because he had the glowy fist. You know, not like the comics where he had it like flaming and stuff. So I just it was interesting to see, their take on Iron Fist and the hero you didn't really see too much of on TV.
Supergirl.
Just thought I'd pipe.
Oh, yeah. No, that's fine. So Supergirl is being trounced 29-71 by Legends of Tomorrow.
There's a surprise. I mean,
I asked the same thing, and my wife watches those, so she's like, oh yeah, Legends way better than Supergirl.
Yeah.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Punisher, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is losing 45-55 for the Punisher, but that's pretty close. It could change. It could have changed. I don't know what the voting is at the moment.
Seen a few episodes of the Punisher, the new Punisher season. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
You like it? Have you seen Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since like season 3.
Oh, okay.
For some reason I dropped off and now I hear that Coulson's not around anymore.
Well, they don't know that yet. The end of the last season had him quote unquote kind of retiring on his way to dying, but who knows what the new season's going to bring. I don't even know. I think they might have thought the last season was going to be the last season, and for some reason, the mouse keeps walking back up to ABC and saying, oh no, you're renewing this.
Then we have Gotham versus Preacher. Gotham is – that's another close one. Gotham's behind 45-55.
How is Gotham doing so well against Preacher?
I don't know. And then
What channel is Preacher on?
AMC.
AMC, yeah.
It's really good too.
I've never seen either one, to be honest with you.
Oh wow! And then Luke Cage versus Black Lightning. I was shocked that it was this much of an upset thus far. 74 for Luke Cage, 26 for Black Lightning.
Backwards.
Now, here's the thing. If it was Luke Cage season 1 versus Black Lightning, I could understand this because the first season was great. The second season, though, wasn't that I didn't think it was that great. And it ends with a cliffhanger that, of course, is now never going to be resolved.
Maybe not never. But most likely never.
True. Yeah.
So again, that is where standings are right now. Make sure you keep an eye out for that hashtag Nerd Madness on our Twitter, and you can vote in our polls and have your voice heard too.
Hey Tim, you like Black Lightning a lot, I guess?
I do. I watched the was it the season finale last night, and I mean it's great. The writing is awesome. The music is great. I mean, just the whole, everything that they've thrown into this, I think it's the best thing that, as far as superheroes goes, is, for superheroes is great. Next one under that is The Flash, and then all the other ones I really are okay, but, I really like it. I think it's great.
Yeah, for Black Lightning, the way they left it. It's the sense of family, I think,
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I wish the wife had powers, but then they could all band together. It's kind of like the Partridge Family with Lightning.
Speaking of family, we're going to take a quick moment and hear from our family over at the Pulse Podcast Network.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is 8-Bit Ray from the Gorilla Brain Podcast, part of the Pulse Podcast Network. Did you know that you could be using this spot to advertise your company or business? Well, I've done the research, and PodcastInsights.com report that podcast listeners are loyal, affluent, and mostly college-educated. But most importantly, are 5 times more likely to interact with the ad they hear on their favorite podcast than an ad from any other medium. If you would like to advertise your company or brand with our network, it's simple. All you have to do is send an email to marketing@pulsepodcastnetwork.com. I'll say it one more time. marketing@pulsepodcastnetwork.com. And we hope to hear from you soon.
All right, we're back. And that was a really bad segue. But don't forget to check out PulsePodcastNetwork.com for some other great shows. Let's talk a little news. Marvel had some interesting news come out this weekend, past few days. This is the contender for the dumbest conspiracy theory ever. And when I just saw, I saw it on one site and I ignored it. And then I saw it pop up on, two other sites. And I'm like, all right, we got to talk about this. There's a theory that that Disney is buying tickets for Captain Marvel it'll win in the box office.
I'm sorry. I was in one of the theaters to see Captain Marvel, and it was basically there were only 3 or 4 chairs left by the time the movie started. And that's unusual for my area because there are so many theaters.
Look,
and I was at an early showing, so.
Like you guys both know me pretty well at this point. You know, I don't like to use terms like incel, but this is an incel theory if I've ever heard one. Like, that is the dumbest thing. You're going to throw money away and lose money on the movie just so you can looks like you're winning in the box office? That makes no sense.
Because that's how capitalism works.
they do it with books. It's basically they'll go out and buy a couple of thousand copies to get the book up on the New York Times bestseller list, which then forces that book, into the limelight and sells more copies than if it had stayed.
Right.
But that's
to get the name out because.
And it's also a different business model because a book is going to stay a prime run New York Times bestselling book is going to be on a shelf for 5-6 years, period, unless it's a perennial bestseller. Films are like a big film these days is at the theater for 2 months.
Yeah.
The business model makes no sense. I mean, it started by Jack Posobiec. I mean, that guy's an idiot. So, I mean, I don't know, man. Where do you find these things?
Is that who originated the theory?
Yes. Yes.
Was he the one who there was a tweet on Twitter where it was like, 7:20 showing for Captain Marvel, and my theater is empty, and it's a picture of the snack bar, and no one there, and it's like,
right,
because they're all in the theater waiting for the movie to start, like,
or you're at a theater that happens to have nobody at there. When did you go to the movie theater? Like, my theater in DeKalb, Illinois, on a Sunday afternoon was surprisingly packed. My wife and I had to sit in the front row, but it was one of those smaller theaters with like the reclining chairs and super comfortable, so it wasn't that bad. But like. I don't know, man. Like, all I know is, like, cosmic book news and bounding into comics are sites that I'm not going to visit unless you ask me to.
Like, okay.
I said, I'll be that guy.
We'll say, okay, before I say what I'm about to say, Tim, what do you think of this crazy story?
Well, you know, I saw some pictures on, I don't know if it was Twitter or Facebook about this, and they're showing the empty theater, or one I saw is actually the empty lobby, mm-hmm. looking at the the popcorn counter and stuff, and I was just like, you know, I don't. That must have been a picture from, like, you know, when they show what the theater looks like on the screen, and
right,
they just show it and it's like, oh yeah, there's nobody there. Well, no, that was a promotional picture or something, but that's. That's ridiculous. My theater was, I went and saw it at one of those theaters that has all the recliners in it.
Yeah, so did I.
And, you know, it was just, every single seat was filled,
mm-hmm.
including the little kids next to me. I have to see the movie again now. I didn't realize that popcorn bags could be so loud. I mean, who invented these packaging for theater candy and popcorn anyways?
That's a good question.
Oh yeah, put the real crinkly cellophane on it.
It's the loudest. I'll never forget. I'm going off on a tangent because now I'm angry. Remember going to the movie theater once, and this guy next to me had what were those, the pistachios, the ones you have to spit out?
Oh no.
I had to listen to that through the whole movie. Anyways, getting back to what we're talking about.
So somebody who will remain nameless, but was once a guest on this show.
Uh-oh.
Oh.
And has, hold on, and has a YouTube channel where he used to do drawings on the channel. Now all he does is complain about the Star Wars movies. He's so fallen off the deep end that he was espousing these theories and saying how it could be true. And I'm like, are you serious? This is ridiculous.
That dude done lost his mind.
Oh my God. He has. Oh, he has. I'm out of respect. I'm not going to say his name, but he has completely lost his mind. And I don't know why. I mean, maybe he's bitter over being fired from the company that he used to work for, but I don't know.
It's amazing how social media and that type of stuff can just turn this type of thing into, you know, something it's not.
I can't believe why we've even talked about it, to be honest with you.
Or how about this one? Because you asked me not to bring it up, and I had to now.
I know. That's my fault.
Yes, yes. So continuing with the internet outrage machine. Apparently, the internet is upset because Brie Larson or Captain Marvel had makeup on in the new Endgame trailer.
So we went crazy all the way right. Now we're swinging to crazy all the way left.
You know the men are wearing makeup in all those movies too, right? I mean,
did it say she had new makeup on or the same?
No, because she didn't wear makeup in the Captain Marvel movie, or very little makeup. But yeah,
it's a more subtle look, we'll say.
Yeah, but she's obviously got lipstick and eyeliner on in the 2 seconds you see her in the Endgame trailer. And they're saying that's, you know, that's the Russo brothers trying to sex her up.
Oh, for God. I mean, not that I wouldn't put it past them, but I don't think.
So here, let's put it like real basic argument here. In her movie, she's a soldier who was on a mission, and gets shot down on Earth. And then while she's here, you know, things happen to her. We won't get into that. If you want to know more about it, listen to our episode from last week.
Or watch the movie.
Or go watch the movie. And then, you know, she goes off at the end to go help another alien race out. So she didn't have time to pretty herself up in the movie. It takes place over, what, a day and a half? You know the story?
Yeah.
So now she comes to Earth. Obviously, some time has passed because she's not in her uniform or costume or whatever you want to call it. So she's had time to clean up and freshen herself up. And maybe she talked to Black Widow about how do Earth girls, you know, dress themselves up in this world? You know, like, think, people. Like, why are you getting angry at something that's stupid?
Because we have to be angry about something. Can't win. Like, no matter what you do, you can't win.
No.
I thought her makeup was nice. You know, it had, like, a nice blending of the rouge with the smoky eyes, and I thought it was wonderful.
Yeah.
We're talking about the scene with Thor in it, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I see. I didn't even notice makeup. I was too busy looking at the hammer flying at her and her not flinching. So, you know, I was thinking, wow, this would be awesome to see, because even worse than the Hulk versus Thor, I'd love to see Captain Marvel versus Thor.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
I get
it. Yeah. That's what I'm getting
at. Eyeliner on, too.
People can find the strangest little things to complain about. So, thank you, Internet. Real quick.
Thanks, Internet.
Let's move on to the obviously biggest story of the week. In a big surprise move to everyone except for maybe the people of this podcast, Disney has rehired James Gunn to direct Guardians of the Galaxy 3.
Did they give a reason?
Nope.
Or was it just oopsies?
They said that, I think it was Alan Horn met with James Gunn multiple times, and, like, we're going to say it had nothing whatsoever to do with Suicide Squad moving forward, and they decided to give him another chance. Dude, he won in all this. Not only does he get his movie back, but now he gets to make a DC movie. He's the only guy who's actively working across both sides of this now.
That's another thing that's flying around the internet, and I've heard other people voice it on different podcasts. It's like, well, Disney was jealous that DC hired him, so now they wanted him back. And it's just like,
no,
I really doubt that.
I doubt jealousy is the term of it. I mean, did you see Dave Bautista, like, on wrestling, with you, give me what I want? That's what he wanted. And Disney was confused.
They didn't realize
he was talking to Triple H. He was actually talking to Alan Horn.
Maybe Disney realized all the money that they were going to lose. If he didn't direct it and someone else did and it came out to be a flop,
I think what it was is they realized he set something up in the first two movies that ties in with their plans going forward for the MCU, and that his script best met what it was. So if they were going to use his script, they were going to pay him anyway. You know what I'm saying? They have to pay him for the script. They can't just use the script and say, oh, it's ours.
Right.
So once that got leaked out there and no one blinked an eye that they were using a script, then it was like, oh, well, if we rehire him, no one's going to care, you know?
I'd like to think that the reason they rehired him is because they had time to think about why they fired him, that it was all basically just a tempest in a teapot, and, you know, it was a concerted effort to get him fired, and they finally made a right decision and decided to that.
Conspiracy theory time. Was he ever really fired?
Oh, no.
Was this just a, you know, go to your room and think about what you've done? Yes, we fired him from the movie. Well, I think he's had plenty of time to think it over. Now, where, you know, it's like you do with your kids when they're being bad. Well, I think you've learned your lesson.
That's very possible. Hey, when this all happened, I said, don't be surprised if he's like a consultant, at least on the movie on screen, on set, and maybe they'll keep it quiet. But yeah, I never thought they were going to ever totally get rid of him.
Hmm. I don't know. I'm glad he's back. It's going to make for a better movie.
It'll make for a better movie for a lot of reasons, not just because he's directing it, but because it'll make the actors happy, you know?
Yes.
And that would have a big, like, if they hired someone, number one, it would have been really hard to find someone that they were going to hire that all the actors would fully agree with and be happy about, you know? And that person would have felt like an outsider. So,
and there would have been a pall over the whole filming anyway. I mean, that kind of thing you don't just ignore. I mean,
right.
Well, I don't know. I mean, sometimes guys get fired from movies and they move forward without, well, you know, there's differences, but you know, it gets done. This was just different. Like, and I think these Guardians movies are such a part of James Gunn's voice that no matter who else directed it, it wouldn't feel like the first two films. And the feeling of those movies are why it works. Because that movie should have been a disaster, but it wasn't. And it's because of James Gunn. So, in the end, it all worked out.
I mean, the thing is, the only person that they named that they ever floated out as a possible replacement was Tiki.
Tiaka Waititi.
And he said he wouldn't do it. You know, and it's funny because current directors working for him, he's the only one that has a similar voice. Mm-hmm. You know, but yeah, exactly. Like, I think that's what it was. It was like, well, they might work with him. Well, he doesn't want to do it. Well, okay, we'll hire him back.
Which again makes me wonder, because usually guys lobby for these kind of things. Makes me wonder if it was kind of like a, well, we'll just get rid of him for a little bit and wait till this dies down.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Like, there wasn't a bunch of names floated out there, and then all of a sudden it was like, we did an exhaustive search and no one can repeat his voice, you know?
Well, they didn't. They said they weren't going to make the movie. It was on an indefinite hiatus.
Right, exactly.
And then it was like, oh, it's back on again. So, I mean, like, I don't know. The more I talk about this, I talk myself into this, that this is real, that this really was just a timeout, make people happy, hope it goes away thing.
I'd be a lot more devious than I'd like to give them credit for.
Dude, we're talking about the mouse, man. Man.
True. I know.
Come on.
I agree with the making the whoops, sorry. Can I jump
go
in?
Ahead. Oh, go yeah.
I agree with them making the actors / characters happy.
Right.
You know, because the morale in itself would increase, would be much better. So you might be able to, I don't know, I think everybody worked better together if they were happy, because I know they weren't happy when, and they were all standing behind him and stuff when he got let go.
Yeah, they all backed him up in one form or another, some very vocally.
So John, you said, oh, it's Disney, right? There's a book, I believe it's called Mouse Under Glass. Have any of you guys ever heard of this book before?
Never.
I have.
No.
It's about all of the underhand, devious things that Disney does or used to do. And in fact, one of the things they talk about in the book is if you were at one of the parks and you died, they would drag your body to the outskirts of the park to say you died out there, not in the park.
They staples. I worked for a guy back in the about 10 years ago. I was working for a company called, I won't name the company, but they put on like big shows, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these big corporate shows. And they were telling stories about what they did for Disney, and Disney stapled sailor hats to little ducks' heads so that in their parade they would walk around and have little hats like Donald Duck.
So yeah,
this is a vile company. Let's not forget.
Let's not put anything past the mouse. It's like, you know, wow. Hiring some, like buying a company where somebody is currently writing a script. And then when the guy asks you about, well, what's the status of the movie? He comes out even more confused.
Oh. By the way, that's an apocryphal story and by no means should be taken as anything more than parody, should some lawyers hear this show.
Oh, yes. So,
and don't forget what they did to the author of Mary Poppins, right? They basically waited her out until she died, not allowing her to make another movie until she died, and then took over the rights.
I just saw the sequel over the weekend. It's really not bad. So Noah Hawley is still writing? Question mark. The solo Doctor Doom movie. So there was going to be a solo Doctor Doom movie from Fox. And then after they were bought out, he went and asked what the status of it was. And they were like, well, we're still not sure.
Okay, but why then?
Here's why. Because these projects get put into motion a long time ago. And oftentimes in Hollywood, the right hand don't know what the left hand's doing. So this guy got paid to write a script.
Right.
And he has not. So they're technically still in development on this. So they got to pay the guy out because they got paid to play contracts. So this guy's going to work on it until tonight, I believe. Tonight at midnight is when the merger goes through.
Right.
At which point he will turn in his script and they'll go, thank you very much. And it'll be done.
And
he'll get his paycheck and everybody wins because no one wants Doctor Doom movie.
Right. Like I say, that script will be put on a shelf and sit there and collect dust.
Well, if it does come to fruition, I'm glad it'll be with the MCU and not just Fox.
True that.
Yeah. Well, if it stayed with Fox, I think it would be a true Doctor Doom.
Yeah,
in every sense of the word.
Yeah. I don't know what they were thinking with. Well, we're not going to reboot the Fantastic Four again. We're now just going to give you a solo Doctor Doom movie. I don't know what the thought behind that was, but
it worked for Sony. Venom made money, man.
But Venom's an anti-hero, not so much just a villain.
You could do Doom as any. I mean, like, I think Venom just happened to work. They also wanted to make a Sinister Six movie on its own. That still might happen. So we're not, I mean, like, just because it worked that one time doesn't mean they're going to try it wrong 10 other times.
Just to interject and tie back to something else, actually, a Doctor Doom movie would be like, it would be like watching Overlord from the anime. That's basically it. Overpowered bad guy doing whatever he wants. But which could be good if it was done well. Maybe they should give it to James Gunn.
Maybe.
He's busy.
I know.
Well, yeah, he's busy because he's working for both Marvel and DC. So what's happening over at DC?
Can you imagine the NDAs for that?
No kidding.
Crossfire NDAs.
So
one side of his brain's not allowed to tell the other side what's going on.
I think that's what got him in trouble in the first place.
Yeah. So Matt Reeves has announced that The Batman will begin production by the end of the year, which I find fascinating because they haven't cast Batman yet, right?
I think we'll call that positive thinking at the very best.
You think that's what that is?
I keep hearing Robert Pattinson.
I've heard that too. And
the forerunner, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's not even a thought in my mind that that's going to happen.
Well, that's the reason Batman goes out at night is because he glitters during the day.
And just like that, you lost me.
Yeah,
I don't think this Matt Reeves Batman's ever going to happen.
No,
I don't think so. I don't know. I mean, like, it never seems to really catch. You know, how many times have we talked about? Oh, a new take for the Matt Reeves Batman movie. Oh, this is going to happen. Well, no, that's not going to. I mean. I don't know. This whole thing seems like a stuck in development hell.
I want to know what the script was that Snyder and
Jeff Johns.
That's what I meant. Jeff Johns and Affleck wrote.
I'm betting it's probably a lot like Batman Year, like his Batman Earth One. I bet it was a lot like that.
Yeah, because I mean, it's just like that. I have to imagine it was a good script. I don't know why Warner Brothers rejected it.
Was it?
You got the best writer working at DC right now, and an Academy Award winner.
Green Lantern. Green Lantern was really bad.
And just like that, you lost me again. Green Lantern was... Mm.
Yes, but he had an Academy, 2-time Academy Award winner to rein him in.
Didn't... Who? Oh, Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
Martin Brest is a damn good filmmaker, and he didn't. Like...
Yeah.
I mean, Geoff Johns has kind of been taken away from a lot of the film stuff with DC anyway. Like, there's a book, like a book somewhere that's going to come out someday about everything in DC right now. It's going to be fascinating.
Are you going to write that book?
No, I want to read it.
Oh, okay.
Like The Late Shift. You ever read The Late Shift, the book about how Johnny Carson retired and James Letterman? Yeah, so I want a book like that. About this.
Man, poor David Letterman.
He wound up okay.
Yeah, he wound up okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of writing and hope and wishful thinking, I really think this goes in that category. Ezra Miller is now teamed with Grant Morrison to write the solo Flash movie himself.
Grant Morrison had a 3-issue run with Mark Miller on The Flash just before Geoff Johns started his run 17 years ago, something like that. And it was really good. Grant Morrison is my favorite writer. I've expressed that many times. Oh my God. Long time ago. this is the best example of a last ditch effort if I've ever heard one.
What do you think, Tim? Would you go see a solo Flash movie?
No. I don't know. Some of these movies, you know, DC movies, it's like, you know, I kind of wait and see the reactions and then I will go, you know. If I don't hear good reactions, then I'll, you know, Aquaman I heard was good, so I went and saw it. But I just you know, and with Batman, not straying from The Flash, but with Batman, it seems like they just keep having movies just to see if they can get it right. You know, so if we have one more Batman, it's going to be one and another different person playing it, and, you know, maybe it'll be the best one, maybe it won't, and then, okay, so let's have a solo Flash movie and see how that goes. You know, and when we already had The Flash in Justice League, and, that kind of flopped. I never saw Justice League, to be honest with you.
Oh.
You didn't really miss much.
No.
Yeah. So, but, I mean, it'd be cool, I guess, to have a Flash. You just have to do it right, that's all.
And they're talking about making it darker, was the term that just made me go, ugh.
Right.
I mean, it's not The Flash.
I've heard two things about this. Like, number one, when I initially heard about this, Ezra Miller was frustrated with how slow things have been moving at DC. And so he said, I'm going to take it upon myself to write this movie. But then I also heard that some of the ideas he was hearing from Warner Brothers, what they wanted from the Flash movie, he said was too light and campy, and he wanted a more dark and serious Flash movie.
So is this like, is this from any, like, is this news from anyone but Ezra Miller? Like, is DC or is Warner put out like a press release saying that they're doing this, or is this, could this be something that Ezra Miller is just doing?
Or,
like I said,
yeah. Or is this Ezra Miller won't leave them alone? So it's like, oh, here, you and Grant Morrison go write a script and come back, you know,
and Grant be cashing them paychecks,
right? Exactly, and it's like it'll keep him busy for 6 months, you know, and leave him. They'll leave him alone for. They'll leave Warner Brothers alone for a while, you know?
See, they're doing so well with the Flash TV show. And the guy that, I don't know his name, the guy that's playing the Flash is like
Grant Gustin.
Really, really good. And he's like perfect for Barry Allen and all that stuff. You know, maybe if they brought him into this role, then, you know, that'd be fantastic. But I don't know.
That's the thing, though. They're not, they're determined to keep the TV universe away from the movie universe, and they are also basically determined to destroy the movie universe. It's like you said, they're just literally throwing spaghetti at the wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah, I've heard over and over again from people, and I'm one of them, I'll admit I've said this myself, if they had Grant Gustin play Flash in the movie, I think that would sell an extra, you know, million tickets.
As long as the movie was, if they did a dark one, it wouldn't work. Yeah, because that's not the Flash anyway.
No, exactly. But yeah.
You could do a darker story around the Flash as long as the Flash himself isn't dark.
Right.
But I don't think it's the right, the Flash should be a little bit, not campy, but not even lighthearted, Marvel-esque, shall we say. Or there's some fun to it.
That's when the Flash works the best, I think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have them on the animated stuff. The animated stuff is just fantastic. So it'd be cool if they brought that humor.
Right.
Yeah.
And then finally with DC News, speaking of humor, let's go to one of the most humorless writers in comics, Frank Miller, and team him up with John Romita Jr. and do Superman Year One. I am so unsure about. I love Frank Miller. I don't know if I like Frank Miller's Superman.
So I don't like Frank Miller's Superman. The Superman that he used in The Dark Knight Returns is not a good person. And I don't know if Superman, we've had long talks about this. Superman's a character about hope and those kind of things. And that's just something that Frank Miller seems, I don't use the word devoid of, but it doesn't seem to be his strength. So I don't know what to think about this. If I was picking a guy to write Superman, Frank Miller would not be that guy.
So, it's going to be the anti all-star Superman.
Yes. Yeah, that would be it. I don't know, man. I don't.
Superman in The Dark Knight Returns serves a specific purpose, as in trying to tell a story about frustration with the government and government corruption. And I mean, come on, he uses Ronald Reagan, you know, as the president in that story, and makes Superman a tool of the American government. So he's using him in a specific tone in that story, but I've never seen him write anything else for Superman where, you know, like you said, there's no hope in his Superman.
I don't know if he likes the character. It doesn't read like, if you like a character, it's very hard to take a character of hope and Superman and make him essentially a Boy Scout nuclear weapon, which is basically how he writes them. Very 80s, it's very of the era, and I guess man's thoughts can evolve in 30 years.
Right.
But I don't know if they evolve that much. I mean, you read Batman, Batman Year One, I forget the name of the story where Dick Grayson's a murderer. Strikes Back, that's one. It doesn't strike me that Frank Miller, an older Frank Miller, is the guy to write a Superman story, let alone this Superman story.
Right. I don't know. Tim, have you read any Frank Miller stuff?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. Okay. I'd like to see Steven Spielberg direct the Superman movie.
He'd be the perfect if he doesn't, but he hates comics. Mm. He hates superhero movies.
He does?
He's come out against it. But you're right. As far as tone and mindset and what a guy could bring, Steven Spielberg would be perfect to do a Superman movie.
Having Steven Spielberg whimsy would be perfect for a Superman.
The aw shucksness, the earnestness of a Steven Spielberg movie, borderline schmaltiness, would be perfect for Superman. Yeah. But again, the guy he has no interest in doing it, so. Shame.
Yeah, it's kind of James Gunn doing a Superman movie. Oh, wait.
I thought they didn't they already do a Frank Miller Superman movie? It's called Brightburn.
Burnbright.
No, but this, that's James Gunn, right?
Yeah, that is James Gunn.
Yeah.
So same difference.
Well, it's that, that's interesting too. The guy who gave you the Guardians of the Galaxy movies giving you that version of a Superman type character is mind blowing to me, you know?
If this was a comic or anyone else but James Gunn, I'd be very, very suspect. But the trailer looks great. He's a good filmmaker, so I think there might have something there.
Yeah. So Frank, if you're listening to this, love your Daredevil run. I love the Dark Knight Returns, but I don't know if you're the right person to write Superman Year One. He's going to be breaking Zod's neck. It's all I can say.
Again.
Again.
And finally, since I had to bring up a news article to upset
that's the end of the podcast. Sorry.
I've got to bring up a news article to upset John.
I'm sorry, we've run out of time.
And it is official. Hans Zimmer will be writing the score for the new Dune movie.
Oh God,
Hans Zimmer.
I cannot wait to see this movie. There, it is shaping up so great.
This movie has 100% less Picard in it, so I'm not really that interested. And
is he the guy that played with Neil Sean? Hans Zimmer.
No.
Or am I thinking of somebody else?
Hans Zimmer wrote the music for the Superman movies and the Dark Knight movies.
Oh, so, that guy.
Basically, it's all a drum beat and maybe some instrumental in the background, but it's all boom, 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 and that's really all there is to it. And all of his movies, I'm sorry, to me, they all sound the same.
Okay. Disregard what I said.
No, that's okay. Right. I mean, you know, I don't think a lot of people actually know who Hans Zimmer is, but that's a running joke on this show is that John hates Hans Zimmer. He's his mortal enemy.
With a passion.
Yes.
I'm sorry, but once you've gone John Williams, you cannot go Zimmer. It just doesn't, your brain does not accept.
He's like the anti-John Williams. Like, he's much more minimalist than like Philip Glass inspired, more so than,
if minimalist, by minimalist, you mean three notes and that's it. Well, then sure, yeah.
Oh my God.
Hater.
Philip Glass inspired. I love it.
It is.
Again, I will use the same exact argument I used, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, is which score do you remember better? Can you whistle the John Williams Superman tune or can you do the Zimmer one? And I tell you, anybody who's even heard the John Williams score once, they can hold that tune. They can sing that song. You cannot do that with Zimmer. All it is it's got a drum beat, right? Well, yeah, so does every other one of his scores. So
counterpoint. The whole point of a soundtrack is to move a story and move a film along, not to be an entity unto itself.
And there are John Williams did that though.
Yeah, but you say, oh, you can hum the theme, and I'm not disagreeing. I love John Williams Superman. But I mean, like, I don't think Hans Zimmer was trying to do that. I don't think he's trying to make it something that you would whistle. So mission accomplished in that regard.
I don't know. I really don't. I mean, I think of, like, instead of the Superman movie, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and, like, how different that movie would be without the music.
Agreed. Star Wars.
Oh, definitely.
I'll agree, but the man's in his 70s. We can't keep going to the John Williams well.
No, but there are other composers who can write in that style.
Trevor Rabin being one.
Yes.
But Trent Reznor, really good.
But
I'd say cloning technology, technically.
But Hans Zimmer is the hot guy right now, so.
He is. That is true. That being said, I think this, like I said before, I think this Dune movie is looking really, really cool. I'm very excited for it.
Other than the soundtrack.
I'm even down for the soundtrack. I think it's going to be all right. I'm telling you, that giant worm's going to pop out of the sand, and it's going to go when it opens its mouth, and it's going to look awesome. It's
gonna everybody's going to go, oh, is this Tremors 6?
To be fair, it's all been a ripoff of Dune.
This is true.
I never understood Dune. I didn't understand it.
Yeah, Frank Herbert's story is, it does get complicated in later books, and it is all very, not fable-like, maybe like mythology-like.
Yeah, it's definitely like, of a,
it's mythic.
He was definitely on the Joseph Campbell, bandwagon early on before it became really a thing.
They kept talking about a spice.
They were spice miners, right?
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're looking for spice? Oh.
Well, you know, the storyline was looking for spice. He was looking to be spiced up.
You know, like Luke Skywalker was a moisture farmer.
I don't know. Maybe it was because Sting was there.
Sting and Captain Picard could not save that movie.
God.
David Lynch couldn't save that movie.
No.
But I don't know. I still like the first one better than I think I liked. They had that
Sci-Fi Channel one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just a TV movie. Like, how many great TV movies are out there? Really?
Not many.
Maybe three.
Do you have three in mind?
No. I just threw a number out. Oh, okay. Sorry.
There's like two good TV movies I can think of off the top of my head.
Okay, what are they?
Stephen King's It, the original. It's a damn good made-for-TV horror movie. And Brian's Song. I'm from Chicago, so it's like required viewing.
Ah, okay.
Brian's Song, a great movie.
Yeah, see, because when I'm thinking of miniseries, not made-for-TV movies, that's my problem.
Same thing, really. It's just longer.
Okay, so what about The Color Purple?
That's not a made-for-TV movie. That was in theaters.
Was it?
Yeah. It won an Oscar.
What am I thinking of then?
I have no idea what you're thinking of.
Okay, never mind. I take that back. Hold on. Good.
Strike that, reverse it.
Yeah, strike that, reverse it, erase it from the record.
Edit point.
Then let's think. Made for TV. I can't think of any. Oh. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
All the Peanuts movies.
Two I think of. It's pretty good. Those are.
It's cheating, but okay.
And one day, the Sour Grapes movie.
That's right. I would love it.
See? Perfect.
And I'd get Steven Spielberg to direct it.
Because it's a comic strip, not a comic book.
Exactly.
Right. There's a loophole.
I think we solved a lot of problems here today, gentlemen. And maybe created some new ones.
It's what we do.
Cool. So before we wrap up, real quick, well, actually, you know what? I'm going to give you the question we normally wrap our interviews up on, Tim, and that is, how do you measure success?
I'm going to ask this question someday. I measure success in attainable goals. So set yourself a goal that you know you can get done, and when you get there, you'll have a sense of accomplishment. I think if you set your sights too high and too far away, it's going to be more difficult to get there. So, you know, for myself, I set an attainable goal, and I know that I'm pretty sure I can accomplish. So, I have a sense of accomplishment. So, that's basically how I measure success.
That's actually very sound advice. I like that. One small step at a time, right?
Yeah, like if you're raking the backyard and say, okay, I'm going to get this quadrant of my backyard rake today, instead of trying to rake your whole backyard, it's like a quarter of an acre. you know, I know I can get this done today, so and you can get it done, and you do get it done, then you did it.
Right. Exactly. You know? Cool. All right, and then where can...
So I almost sounded like a psychologist there, didn't I?
And,
which I'm...
Okay.
I play one on TV.
Ah, okay. Where can... and then what? One last time, where can people find you online and find Sour Grapes?
Yep, my website is sourgrapescomic.com, and... I'm on Instagram at sourgrapes2017 and Twitter sourgrapescomic and Facebook. My fan page is facebook.com/sourgrapescomic, and you can also look for me on Facebook. Says Tim Jones, cartoonist or something like that, and or something I pretend to be. And so that's basically where you can find me, or if you can find my house, you can find me there.
No. No. There are a lot of weird people out there on the internet. You don't want to say that.
We do not condone doxing.
I would never.
All right.
I couldn't afford the alimony.
Oh. All right, boys and girls. I think that's where we're going to put a pin in it for this week. So I say thank you to our guest, Tim, for being here.
And thank you very much for having me on. I appreciate all the kind words and the checks in the mail. And, as a matter of fact, I still owe Wizard a check, too.
Okay. Yeah. Joey breaks thumbs, too, so you got to watch out.
Oh.
I'm kidding, Joey. I'm kidding.
No, I really appreciate you having me on it. Like I said, I listen to the show every week and really enjoy it and looking forward to hearing this episode.
Cool. And your check is in the mail.
Thank you so much. I could use it.
So on that note, boys and girls, as always, thanks for listening. And don't let your cake be caught in the door. Have a good week.